This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Good, so we're on Rosh Hashanah Chof Vav Amud Aleph, 26a. Sorry, we've been a little bit erratic over the last few weeks, and this month still we're here this week. Next week we won't, so that's the last break that I'm going to do for the next few several weeks. So we're on to it this week, we're not on next week, and we're back to normal the week after. Today's Gemara, so we're going to touch on some really deep and interesting ideas. The Mishnah says at the top of Chof Vav Amud Aleph, Kol HaShofar is Kasherim Chutz Mishel Toro. This was Asorah B'Tavis' Gemara. So people are learning that Yoni would have learned this on Asorah B'Tavis. Kol HaShofar is Kasherim Chutz Mishel Toro. All Shofaris are kosher, with the exception of the shofar of a cow, mipneishu kerim, because that's not really a shofar, it's a kerim. And the Rashi says on that, ein korui shofar. It's not termed the shofar. V'gabi yom kippurim shofar ksiv, and by yom kippur it specifically says shofar. V'avaras a shofar tzruah. V'perik basa gamin and rosh shonam yovel. And we will learn also that Rosh Hashanah is learned from Yovel that it has to be a shofar, and the horn of a cow is not a shofar. It's not termed. It's not the halachic concept of shofar does not apply to a cow. Omer Rabbi Yosi, "Valo kol ha-shofar is nikru kerim." That's very silly, says Rabbi Yosi. All shofars are called kerim. Kerim means horn. A shofar is a horn. A shofar is a halachic term for an object which is called a horn, called a kerin. Kerin is the biological term, and shofar is the halachic term. And why would you say that a cow's horn is any less of a shofar than a ram's horn? Shenema, as it says, b'mshoch b'kerin ha-yovel. It talks about when you blow the kerin, when you blow the horn of the yovel, it says kerin. So clearly they're all called kerin. The fact that a cow's horn is called a kerin should not be a disadvantage. So the Gemara goes into a discussion on it. And I'm going to move down about seven lines down into the Gemara. Ula Omar. So the Gemara goes into a discussion and says, you know, Rabbi Yosi is quite right. He's got a strong case there. That at the end of the day, they all are kerin is a kerin, a kerin and a shofar are two synonyms. If it makes no difference. But the so what is the Rabbonim's argument? The Gemara goes through various ideas, and then Ula Omar Ula says, "Hainu taima de Rabbonim." This is the reason. The real reason for the Rabbonim as to why they don't allow a cow's horn is kidrav chista, because they hold by the principle that Rav Chista articulated. The Omar Rav Chista mipnei ma ein kohen gadol nichnas bevigdei zohov lifnei velifnim la'avod avedo. Why would the kohen gadol not wear his golden clothes to go into the kodesh kedoshim on Yom Kippur? After all, it's the most important place in the world. Eretz Yisrael is the most important country in the world. Yerushalayim is the most important city in Eretz Yisrael. The Beis Hamikdash is the most important part of Yerushalayim. The Azorah is the most important part of the Heichal is the most important part of the Azorah, of the whole courtyard. And the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that one little cubicle that the Kohen Gadol goes into once a year, is the most important spot in the world, because that's the point where heaven and earth connect. Our tefillahs go through there. That is the point of interface between God's world and our world, at the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So in a precious moment of time, Yom Kippur is in time what the Kodesh HaKadoshim is in space. And we've touched on that kind of idea before, the relationship between time and space. Yom Kippur is in time what the Kodesh HaKadoshim is in space. What gold is in matter, the purest of all material. So surely when the space and the time intersect, by the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, what he ought to be wearing is golden clothes, which he wears every day of the year. Surely there's no day that is more important than Yom Kippur that he should wear. And what happens when he goes inside? When he's working outside, because Kodesh HaKadoshim, is wearing his gold clothes. When he goes inside, he's going to take off his gold clothes, he has the mikveh, and he puts on his white clothes, and he goes in the white. That's where our thing of wearing white on Yom Kippur comes from. Because when the Kohen Gadol used to do this specific avodah of Yom Kippur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he used to wear white and not gold. Ask Rav Chisda, but that's the moment he should be wearing gold. If there's if there's ever a moment to be wearing gold clothing, that's it. Why wouldn't he? Explains Rav Chisda. Lefi she'en kategor nase sanegor. This is a term which is often quoted and misused and abused, because it has a very specific meaning, as we'll see in the Gemara. Because a kategor cannot become a sanegor. A prosecutor cannot become a defendant. And gold is a prosecutor. And Yom Kippur, there's a kapora for the egel. Egel was made from gold. To put gold in the Kodesh HaKadoshim doesn't really make sense. It's quite odd in a way, and the Gemara will question it, but just even in simple concept, normally we say that there is merit in being misaken, in correcting the thing with the very thing you did the wrong with. And we often see that in Torah, that we try and use, when something wrong has been done, we try and use the very thing with which the wrong was done to effect the correction. So surely it would be the greatest thing to take gold, which was used for the egel, and bring it right into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and Yom Kippur to uplift the gold. Surely that would be the best thing to do with the gold. What is this idea of Ein Kategor Naaseh Sanegor? And why shouldn't the Kategor become a Sanegor? Isn't that the greatest defense? Imagine if the prosecutor were to say in court, you know, Your Honor, I've been prosecuting this case. I cease to prosecute. I would like to join the defense. I believe this man is innocent. What greater defense could there be than that? Why Ein Kategor Naaseh Sanegor? That would be the best thing on Yom Kippur. What does Rav Chisda mean? What do you think it means? Let's see further on. Let's see if we can refine an understanding of what that means. Ein Kategor Naaseh Sanegor. First, the Gemara starts questioning it. Are we so sure that that is so? What animal, what does he do with the Kodesh HaKadoshim? He sprinkles the blood of a bull. So why do we say in Kategor, the bull, the cow, it's the same thing. Eagle, bull, the mother, the father, and the eagle, all the same family. If he's so sensitive that he can't even use gold in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what's he doing with a bull? Answers the Gemara, Hoyo v'ishtini ishtini. That's blood, it's not bull. It's blood, it's a different matter. It's not the bull has lost its appearance, and now he's dealing with the blood of the bull. You can't really see whether it's a bull's blood or somebody else's blood. Okay, now that starts leading us into an understanding of what this means, en kategor naaseh sanegor. So what is if it's a Kabbalistic thing, that once something has caused an avera, once something has been the prosecutor, the object should no longer be used for defense. What difference does it make if ishtini ishtini, if it's in the form of a bull or it's in the form of of the blood? What difference should that make? What is the Gemara saying? Why is the Gemara not concerned? The Gemara starts with the question and says, but why is he using the bull on Yom Kippur? Answers the Gemara, because it's not bull, it's blood. Thank you. It's blood, the bull becomes the blood. The gold that the Kohen Gadol wears on Yom Kippur is not a golden calf. He doesn't have a golden calf around his neck. It's golden thread. It's golden matter. Surely that's no different. If the blood is okay, but the bull isn't, surely the gold clothing is okay, even though a golden calf isn't. Why, what's the difference in the removal? It's difficult to understand. Also, Gemara v'ha'iko aron v'chapures u'chruv. Go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What do you see there? You see the aron, and what's the aron covered in? Gold. And the kapores, the lid of the aron, what is it made from? Gold. Uchruvim, what are they made from? Gold. So all of a sudden we're worried about gold in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We're not saying that there can't be gold there, we're saying the sinner shouldn't bring it in. that there's gold there, glorifying the place is fine, but for me to bring it in, okay, were you going to say that? Were you going to make that difference?
The idea that you shouldn't adorn yourself when you're coming in there to ask for forgiveness. You shouldn't glorify yourself in any way. You should try to be as meek and as humble.
Well, but that's not the issue. The meek and humble, the issue is it's gold. And it links to the Egel Hazov. So if it wasn't gold, if it was some other material, then it would be all right from this perspective. But there are other reasons why we do why. So yes, there is something of meekness and humility, but that's not the issue here. The issue is specific, the incense, the distaste. See, what we're learning about here is a Jewish aesthetic, a Jewish art form. Because we've lost, it's so tragic when you think about how much of it we've lost, because there's a beautiful piece, I don't have it in front of me unfortunately, written by Abram Heschel, where he describes how the Nevi'im were offended by immorality, and how that to them it was like ugliness would be to an artist, to an aesthetic person. When they looked at a city, they didn't look at a city and see the magnificent architecture, the feats of engineering, the hum of commerce. When they looked at a city, they saw a dimension of morality or immorality. And when there was a city of great morality, it looked very beautiful to them. And when there was a city of immorality, it looked ugly. We've lost that sense of ugliness. We don't become aesthetically offended by immorality. If we think about it, we become dogmatically offended. Kind of, what is the process we go through? If you see something immoral, you can say, well, that's not really a right thing. It's not in accordance with the Torah, so I should actually be offended. Okay, so I'm offended. That's kind of the route we go through. But it's not an immediate, intensive feeling of rejection and almost disgust for that which is morally ugly, as we are disgusted by something which is physically ugly. So if you were to walk into a place and you were to find that the dog had left a mess and nobody had cleaned it up, what do you feel? You feel disgusted. You feel absolutely disgusted. Would you daven there? Of course you wouldn't daven there. Would you sit there and have a cup of tea? No, you wouldn't. You would ask for it to be cleaned up before. But if there's immorality going on around, and immorality can be the way people are speaking, it can be the way people are dressed, it can be the way people are interacting, what do we say? Not for me to judge. Let people do their own thing. Which means it's not offending us. We're actually not offended by it anymore. We've lost we've lost moral aesthetics. We've lost the ability to be inspired or to be disgusted by that which is beautiful or that which is ugly in morality, in the same way that we are in aesthetics. So when we're looking at this here, what we're really getting into is the way the Jewish soul reacts and the imagery of gold on that particular day does something to the person. This is not so much about Hashem. Because if it was about Hashem, then the blood of the bull would be as bad as the gold. The question is not how God is reacting. The question is how we react being exposed to that particular image at that particular moment. And that's why this Gemara is difficult for us, because we come at it from a 21st century perspective and say, well, what do you react? We don't react at all. We would look at the gold and we would say, I wonder how much it costs. I wonder if it's made by Armani. That's what we would say. That's how we would react to it. We wouldn't look at it and say, yuck, gold on Yom Kippur. Egel Hazov, when I'm trying to get the Egel out of my mind, he walks in with gold. Isn't that disgusting? Get him out of here. That's not how we would respond. We would want to know who the designer was and how much it cost and where he bought it. That's how we, because we're so lost it. We just don't have a feel for spiritual things. So the Gemara says, Ho'ika kafu machta. Okay, but then the spoon and the scraper that he uses, the pan that he uses for the incense, is also made from gold on Yom Kippur. So he is bringing gold into the Kodesh HaKadosh. He's bringing gold tools in. So I understand the furniture being gold is okay. The clothing being gold is not, because he brings it in. So why are the tools all right? Why can the tools? Answers the Gemara. You can't, what does Yisroel mean? Adorn yourself. That's Craig, that's kind of what you were saying a little bit there too. It's the adornment that creates the distaste. To walk in, it's not just to see the gold. It's to see somebody adorning themselves with that which was disgracing them previously. Whether it was 1 year ago, a minute ago, a year ago, or 10,000 years ago. We don't lose our memory. As a nation, things don't change because they're old. The Holocaust isn't less serious because it happened 60 years ago. It's as serious today as it was then. The Churban Beis HaMikdash is not less of a tragedy today than it was then. It's exactly the same tragedy. We don't feel it that way. Because Hashem has given us the blessing or the curse of forgetfulness. Things wear off. But there's some things that shouldn't wear off, that we should retain clarity with, and we should retain intensity with. And that's one of the examples. So the fact that the Egel was a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, doesn't make any difference. To see the Kohen Gadol come in and ask for Kapora, and Kapora for what? For all those sins which are consequences of the Egel. Had we not fallen with the Egel, we wouldn't have sinned in many, many other ways. So the whole reason for Yom Kippur, why do we have a Yom Kippur? Because of the Egel. All the things, the tragedies, everything that's gone wrong, had the Egel not have happened, Yom Kippur would have reverted us to the pre-Odom sin situation. We would have got right back to where we were meant to be. And there wouldn't have been sin, and there wouldn't have been tragedy, and there wouldn't have been warfare, and there wouldn't have been Churban Beis HaMikdash. Just look what we wouldn't have had as individuals and as a nation and as a universe, as a world. As civilization, if the Egel didn't take place. And he walks in adorning himself with gold. It's something we should find completely despicable. That's what the Gemara is trying to get to. So the Gemara says, well, what about outside? Well, while he's outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we don't seem to have a problem with him walking around in his big day Zahov. Answer the Gemara, Bifnimkam, you're right, outside it's okay, inside it's not. So we're going to look at this evening the difference between outside and inside, because that's another distinction that we've lost so much in our generation, to understand the difference between outside and inside. We sometimes behave outside, not sometimes, a lot of behavior outside is the kind of behavior which might be appropriate inside. Bedroom behavior has become okay on the street. Because we don't understand the difference between inside and outside. And there are different levels of inside. There's on the street. There's in your yard. There's in your living room. There's in your bedroom. There's in your bathroom. They're all different. Different levels of appropriateness. We behave in different ways. We need to understand what bifnim means. And so it is, lahavdil mibeis hamikdash itself, different levels of pnim. And this objection to the goal, this whole idea of is, so how have we qualified it, is when a person is adorns himself and brings from the outside in gold which was the source of the embarrassment. That's what it's that whole chain. It's not just one of them. When a person adorning himself or herself brings from the outside in something which is an image of disgrace rather than of true adornment. Also, Gemara Shofar, Nami Bibakal. Let's just pause there a moment. So bringing from the outside in, I would like you to start moving in your minds to the parallel of the human being. So there's the problem. When we take an image, and that's how imagery works after all. What is imagery? Imagery gets at your subconscious. How does it get at your subconscious? Because you're taking it from the outside in. An image is something you see on the outside. It's a familiar object. It's a familiar scene. It's a familiar idea. It's something you've seen. It's something concrete. It's something that belongs on the outside. And you take it from the outside and you bring it into the inside of your heart. That's how imagery works. So when you take something positive from the outside and you bring it in, what happens to the person? Inspiration. That's music. That's literature. That's poetry. That's art. What happens when you take something ugly from the outside in? It's exactly the opposite effect. That's pornography. When you take something, or violence, and you realize now what, as a civilization, we're taking from the outside in. How much beauty are we taking from the outside in? What percentage of what we're taking from the outside in is beauty? and what percentage of it is ugliness, moral ugliness, and not only moral, even aesthetic ugliness we're taking from the outside in. That's the danger. What's on the outside is fine, and what's on the inside is fine. The problem is what you take from the outside in. That has to be very pure. Because when you take something from the outside in, it affects and impacts the very core of your soul. And when the very core of your soul is being impacted, it impacts everything around you. There you it's like a nuclear generator, and you're tampering with the real core. I don't know what the thing inside is called, but I'm sure there's something quite important right inside it, which you shouldn't tamper with. That's the and where all the energy really comes from. That's what the soul is. It's where all the energy really comes from, and be careful what you put in. Because the only thing to put in there is fuel, to keep that energy going. Put the wrong fuel in, and you get an atom bomb. Put the right fuel in, and you get positive nuclear energy. If it's that way with nuclear energy, it's even more so with the human being. So whatever we take from the outside, lifnim, and we take it inside, that fuels our neshamas. Do we want the same ideas with food? That's why we're so fussy about kashrus. What are we doing with food? We're taking it from the outside. You can wear pigskin shoes, nothing wrong with that. You can wear a pigskin belt, nothing wrong with that. But you can't eat anything which isn't 100% kahalacha, because you're taking it from the outside in. That's what we have to be careful with. The Gemara says, but shofar nani bevachutzah, brilliant kasher. So what's this whole discussion about shofar? He doesn't blow the shofar in the Kodesh Kedoshim. Where do we blow the shofar? Outside. Why are we making a big fuss about shofar then? The answer is even more brilliant than the question. Almost, sound penetrated, almost. Kivan de lezikorin hu kibifnim dami. What is shofar for? Shofar is zikorin, to bring, well, let's take it first on the superficial sense, to arouse God's memories for the good, to remember Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, to remember all the good things that we have in our history, to bear upon his judgment. But it's also what other zikorin is taking place on Rosh Hashanah. We ourselves are going tanim, we're going deep inside ourselves, and the shofar is partly what does it. The shofar shakes us up, and we tremble, and we get deep into ourselves as we reflect and meditate and contemplate during the moments of the shofar. Shofar is pnim. So kivan de zikorin hu ki bifnim dami. When you're dealing with the subconscious, here's this idea that I've been developing. The Gemara actually says it. The zikorin, when you're dealing with the zikorin, I'm going to translate here as the subconscious levels. We're talking about zikorin, we're talking about memories that have to be aroused through different mechanisms. When you're dealing with the subconscious, kibifnim dami. That's like finim. That's like Kodesh Kedoshim. So when you're dealing with the subconscious of the human being, you're dealing with the Kodesh Kedoshim of the human being. When you're dealing with a nation subconscious, you're dealing with the Kodesh Kedoshim of the nation. Dealing with history subconscious, dealing with Hashem subconscious, so to say, all of that is very important. That's the piece of Gemara that we're looking, in fact, in terms of Panim. And I just want to learn with you a few pieces of really interesting pieces around that. One is that will then enable us to see the picture a little more fully. One is a piece of Orachaim. Orachaim is on Vayikra in Parashat Shmini, chapter 10, verse Beis. And the Orach Chaim says the following. It says in the pasuk, when the Aaron and the Kohanim are being inducted into the service of the Mishkan for the first time, by Yomer El Aaron, Hashem said to Aaron, Moshe says to Aaron in the name of Hashem, Kach lecho egel ben bokor lechatos. Take for yourself an egel as a korban chatos. What do you think the Orach Chaim is going to ask? Why not egel? And Kategan Isaiah, come on, the korban chatos, Aaron, and you're bringing an egel. You're not allowed to wear zov, but you're wearing an egel. And we don't blow a shofar made from a cow, but you're bringing an egel, a little odd that is. The ayul oila, and bring a ram as an oila. By craving Hashem, bring it before Hashem. Vel b'nei Yisrael to da be'alemo, and for b'nei Yisrael, K'chu, take for yourselves what l'chatas? No, ego. Se'irizim. B'nai Yisrael, you take a goat. V'egel, v'chenes b'nai Yisrael t'mim l'ayla, but for l'ayla you bring an eagle. What's going on here? When the eagle, when not the eagle, explains the Orachayim. Let's analyze what Aaron did. He said, who has gold, take it off. Remember, he has been with the Egel Azov. Aaron was active in it, and he said, whoever's got gold jewelry, bring it. And he took it from them, and he created this magical, he threw it in the fire, and out came the Egel. So the goldsmithing was done consciously by Aaron. Is that right? He didn't do it for wrong reason, but he did it mindfully. Mindful doesn't always mean for good reason. He did it for good reason, but mindfully. They had already assassinated Chur. So Aaron was working out. Moshe wasn't back yet. They would assassinate him. Things would be bad. He has to protect himself for the sake of Klal Yisrael, and so he doesn't give in to them. Yeah, and so he gives in to them. He was sure they wouldn't give the gold, and if they did give the gold, it would take time, and by then Moshe would have come, he was playing for time. So it was a strategy, but it was a mindful strategy. He brings an eagle because the eagle was the unintended outcome of a mindful action. Since it was a mindful action, it needs a korban chatos. Korban chatos comes for deed. An oilo is for thinking. For wrong thinking, you bring an oilo. For wrong action, you bring a chatos. So, he did wrong action. But the wrong action was on the gold. That's why we're so sensitive about the gold when it comes to Aaron. Aaron, you of all people, bringing gold into the Kodesh Kedoshim to adorn yourself, doesn't fit. It's just incongruent. But to bring an eagle as a korban, you did nothing wrong with the eagle. Aaron had no part whatever in the eagle. The eagle was an unintended outcome. That was miraculous. And therefore there's nothing wrong with him bringing the eagle. He wasn't part of that part. So the korban, he brings the korban using the unintended outcome to atone for the mindful intended action. But the gold, which was absolutely intentional, God says, but don't bring gold into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Not so the Jews. They actually sinned with the golden calf. What did they do with the golden calf? Why did Bnei Yisrael sin with the golden calf more than Aaron?
They danced around it.
They used it. They can't bring an eagle as a korban chatos. That would be like Aaron bringing gold. So Aaron can't bring gold because gold was what he used. What did the Bnei Yisrael use? They used eagle. So Aaron can't use gold, but he can use an eagle. The Bnei Yisrael can't use an eagle, but they can use gold, but they can't use an eagle.
Were Levim also
in the
eagle?
They were not in it.
So Levim can bring an
angel. Levim, it's all part of Aaron's clan.
Oh.
And they bring an angel, so the Bnei Yisrael bring a Sirizim as a chatos, and they bring an angel as an oila. So that's the one thing that's interesting. So now, who is this, now that we see that for the Bnei Yisrael, gold is not a problem. So now we understand why the Kohen Gadol can wear gold out in the yard, in the yard of the Beis HaMikdash. So all the Jews are seeing him walking around in gold, not a problem. The problem is when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Who's with him in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Lachash Baruch is outside too, and he didn't have a problem with the gold outside, so why would he have a problem with the gold inside? Where's the problem? It has to be the Kohen Gadol himself. In Kategor Naseh Sanegor means the Gemara is getting so deep into the subconscious mind of the Kohen Gadol himself that you don't need, you've only got a few moments to connect with Hashem. You don't need a flash, just a flash of the eagle in front of your eyes. You don't need that then. That's not what you want at that time. Your mind has to be somewhere in such a completely different space. And when you get into Pnim, when you get into the deep subconscious, as the Kohen Gadol does when he's in the Kodesh Kedoshi, and really connects with his inside, with his neshama, and with Hashem, at that moment is the most dangerous moment to introduce a thought of the eagle. And the gold could just do that. The eagle, the pearl, that's not a problem, but the gold could just do that, and that would make it too dangerous. There's a piece of Michtav Belyov, Belyov Dessler, where he writes the following. The Yom HaKippurim Kohen Gadol Meshamesh B'Bigdei Lovan V'Loi B'Bigdei Zohav. Ki Ein Kategor Na'aseh Sanegel. Kohen Gadol wears white, not gold, because Ein Kategor Na'aseh Sanegel. V'Gemara Makshimi Korbonos HaYom HaNa'aseh B'Chut Shana'asim B'Bigdei Zohav. And the Gemara asks that the other korbanos that are done outside are done in golden clothes, and the shining bifnim kamrin and different, but inside is different. And says Rav Elia Dessler, it's not very clear from the Gemara why inside is different from outside. By given here, and it appears that this is the understanding. When you're working deep inside. Here again, we see that same concept. Think about a geographical point that is inside the Beis Hamikdash. When you're working deep inside, kol megiyo dako horeses es hamatzav, the slightest bit of ego will destroy the moment. You can't afford even a millisecond of ego. Masheenke the madrega chitzonis, but not so when you're outdoors, when you're in the outer reaches. There we say you can do something even if it's not lishmo, because from not lishmo will come lishmo. So that is the deal. That even if you're doing a mitzvah and you're doing it for public recognition, we say do it. It's better to do it than not to do it, because who knows what will come from that. That it's not pure. It's okay. Outside doesn't have to be pure. And it talks about the differences between inside and outside. There are differences in purity. Inside has to be much, much more pure. Then the Gemara goes on to ask from Shofar, says Rav Dessler. The Gemara answers Shofar because the Zikoron is like inside. The idea of consciousness of the Shofar is the arousing of Teshuvah. And Teshuvah, you're getting deep inside and has to be Lishmo for the right reasons. And that's what the Gemara means by Pnim. It doesn't just mean inside the Beis HaMikdash, it means inside the human heart. When you go that deep, you can't afford even a touch of Negiah. We can't live like that all day. We can't live like that all the time. But we can live like that in the precious moments, and we can be sensitive to know which are the moments that we have to live like that and which aren't the moments, to have a sense of occasion, to be able to know what's what, to know what a Shabbos is, to know what a Yom Tov is, to know what a moment of Tefillah is, to know what a moment of saying Kriya Shema is, to know what Shemona Esri is, to know that there are certain moments, and you want to capture that moment, and you don't want anything unfamiliar, you don't want anything negative to be there at that particular moment. It's interesting, I was reading a biography of the Briskerov that came out recently, and a lot of interesting stories. One of them was at the time when the Ben Gurion and the Israeli government were very keen to get religious women to join the army. And at that time, the Gedolei Yisrael were violently against it. And for absolutely good reason at that time, it would have been very, very damaging to the fabric of religious life and religious society. And so they fought it very, very severely. And one of the ways they thought, they came to the Chazon Ish and they asked him to write a letter to Ben Gurion. The Chazon Ish held Ben Gurion, and Ben Gurion held the Chazon Ish in very high esteem. The story is told that Ben Gurion came to see the Chazon Ish to discuss this matter with him, and after he left, the Talmidim asked the Chazon Ish, "How could you have looked at Ben Gurion? Because there's a din that you're not allowed to look at the face of a Rosha." And Ben Gurion did some amazing things, but it doesn't mean he wasn't a wicked man. Wicked people do good things too, and he did some good things, but he was inherently, he was not a good man. The Chazon Ish said, "Did you see? I took my glasses off." And when the Chazon Ish didn't have his glasses, he was blind. That's how careful he was about it. Anyway, he would sign the letter, but he said to the it was Rabbi Lawrence, who was then head of the Aguda, said to Rabbi Lawrence, who else will sign the letter? Rabbi Lawrence said, the Biskarov. And he said, you can't ask the Biskarov to sign this letter. And later on, apparently, they asked the Biskarov, would you have signed? And he said, no, I wouldn't have signed. Not because he didn't agree with the cause, he was passionate about the cause, but he wouldn't have signed the letter. And they asked him, why not? And he said, because it's not possible when you write to a politician that there isn't a word somewhere in the letter of flattery. How can I put my signature to something which is untrue? But how could the Chazanish do it? Just as you have different places, and you need purity, so in our society you need those individuals who are completely pure, and we mustn't call them fanatics. We need them. They need to live in a way that we couldn't live. And the fact that we can't live that way must not allow us to turn it to them and say, they're crazy, they're fanatics. They're not crazy fanatics. They're just absolutely pure. I'm not talking about everybody with a black hat. I'm just saying they are tzaddikim who live the kind of life that we cannot nor should we live. Just as outside of the Kodesh Kodashim, he had to wear gold. It was right to wear gold. Inside the Kodesh Kodashim, it was wrong to wear gold. There are certain things that's right to do on a weekday, wrong to do on a Shabbos. Certain things that's right to do outside, wrong to do in a shul. Certain things that's okay to do in a shul, but not while they're davening. There are different things. We've got to have a sensitivity as to what's okay and what isn't, and be able to encompass the full spectrum. So in society, we need to be able to encompass the spectrum from the absolutely pure to the more adulterated kind of Jew who has to dirty his hands, so to say, in order to do what needs to be done, to achieve what needs to be achieved, to mix with the people that have to be mixed with. But not everybody has to know. We also need our Kodesh Kodashim. You need the precious few people who are so enveloped in the purity of Torah that there could be no thought on their part of stepping outside of that. That's part of the meaning of Panim in this case. And so when we learn this and we understand this piece of Gemara, just once again, as almost with almost every piece of Gemara we've learned together, on the surface, I would say to you, what's the subject of the Gemara? I mean, the Gemara is whether you can use a cow's horn on Rosh Hashanah for blowing the shofar. That's not the subject of the Gemara. So what's the subject of the Gemara? The subject is En Katega Naase Sanhedrin. That's not the subject of the Gemara. The subject of the Gemara is the capacity of minute imagery to destroy a moment when you've only got that moment. And normally it's not the end of the world, but if you have a bit of negative imagery, you can kind of get rid of it. You can purify yourself, you can get rid of it, you can carry on. But when you've only got a moment, you can't afford to have that moment distracted by any kind of negative force. It's like all of us, when we talk on cell phones while we're driving, and most of the time it's okay. You kind of manage. There's no question nobody drives as well talking on a cell phone as they do not talking on a cell phone. But chas v'shalom, there comes a moment where you just need 100% focus because something has just happened at high speed right in front of you. You can't say, I'll just get off the phone. Excuse me for a moment, I have a crisis, I need to... It's gone. Too late. There are moments in life, and we have those moments every day. There are moments in life that get ruined by distraction, even by a fraction of a second distraction. And while we can't live that way all day and all week, we must be able to find the moments when those distractions aren't allowed, and when we create an environment that doesn't allow for that distraction. When we create an environment around us that's as far as possible protects us from that when we have that. And they're not only moments between God and ourselves, there are moments with each other. Sometimes there are moments I find it intriguing to watch people at coffee shops. Not the people who are on their own. A French person once commented that coming to the United States for the first time, how he just couldn't understand seeing people sitting alone at coffee shops. The reason you go to a coffee shop instead of having coffee at home is to talk to people. That's why you go to a coffee shop. You don't go to a coffee shop to plug in your earphones and sit at your computer. Do that at home. He just couldn't understand the culture. He couldn't get it. See, all these different people all sitting alone. You go to France, you go into a coffee shop to see 50 people who've never spoken to each other before, getting into conversations and there's stuff going on. But what's even more interesting is to watch people who are actually together in these coffee shops. How together are they? One's on the phone and the other one's on the phone and they're both on the phone and one's SMSing and one's sending emails, or just completely all over the place. And we need to be able to, particularly in these crazy times when there's such multitudes of distraction, at least find moments that you make holy. Moments that we make, moments of Kodesh HaKadosh, moments of Bifni, and we get inside ourselves, and we get inside of the person we're with, a friend, a husband or wife, a child. Just so we have some moments during the week that are Kodesh HaKadoshim, where there's no negative imagery, where there's no negative distraction, where we can just allow ourselves to get deep into that moment and deep into ourselves and to act to access that which is spiritual and that which is pure. Okay, any questions or comments now?